traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hi, racing fans. Steve Wolf here with our Flying Turn show for today. That's lots of horse racing action. And here to help me talk about it, talk it all up, is the founder of the International Equine Network, our own Scott Miller.
Good afternoon, Steve. Hey, Scott. You've got a lot for us because you just buried me with all the information on Harness Link.
Yeah, in fact, I think yesterday I posted 23 stories. It was there's so much going on here. It's great. In fact, we have good and bad news on the racetrack openings. And as Plainridge Park is finally the last track is going to open, Harness Track on Monday, they've had to jump through big fire hoops of protocols with the government there, and they finally came to agreement, and they'll have all their special safe practices installed, and they start racing on Monday. But then the opposite for Scarborough Downs up in Maine, because they have closed their summer meet. They said that the protocols not allowing fans to come into the place were too extensive, and it was, a lost leader for them to continue racing this summer, and they have closed the meet, which is real disappointing for the horse people up in Maine. Yes, they can go now to Plainridge. Thank goodness they're open. But it's going to be some, tough 6 hours of driving just, to race a horse.
Right. Well, what about Monticello? Have you heard any more about Monticello?
No, they have not. I have not heard back from the powers that be. I guess they don't want to discuss the issue. My feeling, Scott, is that they're the same situation as Scarborough Downs. They know they need to race. They need a place for cheaper horses to go to. Freehold Raceway doesn't open until mid-August. It's a situation where they just don't want to do it because they're going to lose money. And I think the horsemen aren't strong enough up there to be able to get it going, as tracks like Yonkers, Saratoga, Vernon Downs, Buffalo Raceway in New York, they're all open. They're all going, but... sadly, I haven't been able to get a word back, and that's not never a good thing when nobody answers your emails or is able to return a call to let you know what's going on with the situation. I think I need to talk with the horsemen up there and see what they have to say about it.
Well, I'm going to be watching Saratoga because the thoroughbred meet's getting ready to open there, and there's a lot of people in town, and, I don't know if they're going to have live, visitors, to the harness track, there. But,
no, they do not. At this point, they don't. I mean, I don't know if Saratoga is going to be able to either.
Yeah. But at least they're open, and it gives them some revenue from, simulcasting and OTB.
No, exactly, Scott. And let's use the Meadowlands as a hopeful, perfect example in that they opened with no fans. They had strict protocols from the state of New Jersey. They abided by them and was able to show them that they're able to open. And the same with Monmouth Park, and that they'd be able to open not only the racetrack for fans, a 25% capacity, but also the race books, which is, important, although there's not a lot to bet on, but sports are starting to come back. I know in England and Europe, soccer is coming back again, but at least they're able to open and offering wagering opportunity and have fans at. And it just shows that if your state is doing well and the pie charts are toning down and COVID-19 infections or people infected, that they can have fans in the stands, and that's what everybody wants.
Right. Well,
what the racetracks really need, too.
Start collecting the masks from everywhere, where they give you a mask, you come in, it says Meadowlands on it, or Yonkers, or Saratoga.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, COVID-19 night at the races. Come get a
right.
free
I haven't
designer
seen that yet.
Mask. Scott, you know what? You better patent that. Otherwise, somebody's going to pick up on it, and it's going to happen in a week or two.
I know. But
Meadowlands is
doing pretty good.
I'm the kind of guy that would do something at the racetrack. Oh boy, it's tough when you have, but that would be a positive promotion, especially here in Florida if they did it.
Yeah,
what a way to advertise your track too.
And from what I see from like the Meadowlands, they've got it down. They put together a program pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm thinking of your promotion and how great that would be. To give out those logoed masks because people would wear them and
right.
It's good advertising.
But back to the racing scene.
Go ahead. I'm sorry. I'm not going to cut you off.
The other thing I was thinking about is if you got a mask, why can't they start bringing the big jumbotrons out into the parking lot and let them watch it like they would a drive-in movie?
Well, because I think the situation is that. You cannot encourage large groups to get together. Granted, you can try social distancing as best you can, but that's going to end up being a mob situation. But I think it would be a little tougher. A track like the Meadowlands absolutely could do it, but they've got their live racing and stuff; they're set to go.
Well, go through it, get a test for the virus. Get to watch the races and get a mask and go home.
Well, I mean, then you could do, if you had portable betting sites, you could do that in any parking lot. Anyway, that's a little far-fetched. Stick to the mask night at the track. That was a good one.
There you go. Hey, Steve, how are they filling the races? Are they filling them pretty good? Are they getting enough horses in?
Yeah, they are. And even my little track in Quebec, Three Rivers, Trois-Rivières, they're racing 3 days in a row this week, and they have 8 races each day. Friday, Saturday, Sunday,
good.
They're going to go. And on Saturday, it's a special fair card. The Quebec Regional Fair, which is usually about a dozen fair tracks throughout the province, they have nice events on each weekend. And this is for the cheaper horses. It's for horses that, can qualify in and actually race for a purse. And the track was agreed to have 4 of those days. So in after this Saturday, it'll be 2 weeks. We'll have another fair day. And we have horses. We have eight races, most of them filled. So the horse population, even in a province like Quebec, is strong enough to fill 3 days in a row of racing. And granted, I see some horses that are racing Friday going back on Sunday, but there's no problem with that. They're getting their racing in. And all the cards, to the best of my knowledge, that I've seen are filling. I mean, filling. They're, let's say, averaging at least Meadowlands, 8 horses a race or better. I mean, that's strong. But there's so many horses out there. What we're seeing, Scott, is we're seeing the jamming of these races. So when a racetrack in New York or a racetrack in Pennsylvania, I mean, they've got 3 tracks. They have 8 divisions for sire stakes. So they're just all getting jammed in together. So every day, every racetrack has got sire stake races or grand circuit races. And the action's, intense. To give you an example, on Saturday, the Meadowlands has the 2 $250,000 graduate series final for 4-year-olds. One's the open pace. The other is the open trot. Again, this is the culmination of the series. Each final goes for $250,000. Then they also have an elimination race for the Meadowlands pace for $50,000. That has 10 horses in it to get rid of 2. In other words, 8 will advance from this race on Saturday. Plus the 2 horses that got buys, they'll have 10 horses going next week for $600,000. But that's not all. They also have two $44,000 divisions of the Reynolds Memorial for three-year-old Philly Trotters. And the $61,000 Reynolds Memorial for the Colts. And also a, let's see, Friday night they have a $40,000 leg of the Miss Versatility. And that has Atlanta in it, who we all know was the Hamiltonian winner. And last week, she avenged her loss to Manchego, beat her by half a length in the $140,000 Cutler Memorial. And what's important about that is that these two world-class trotting mares, Atlanta and Manchego, beat all the boys in the race. And there were 11 in that race. But these two separated, and they just showed how great they are. And I'm guessing Manchego got a week off after 3 weeks of constant racing, and Atlanta's back in, and boy, she looked good last week, Scott.
Well, you know, I think that at the beginning of this virus, I think everybody kind of panicked. But, you know, it's proven out now, you know, by the racing and the trainers and the route they're taking to, you know, get through the year, that they've done everything, you know, pretty much right. You know, these horses are in top form, you know, and that makes a big difference.
No, they are. And we don't talk about as much, you know, about Ohio and their sire stake program, where track records are being set or tied. And, I mean, they also have a full sire stakes schedule going. And all the races are filled. And they have right now it's Scioto Downs and Northfield Park that are racing. And they sometimes have 8 stake races on one night, just getting everything filled. So that trainer that's got some 2-year-old pacers and 3-year-old pacers, I mean, they're either racing at Northfield or Scioto, which are about 2 hours separate from each other, so it's not too bad a commute. And but if they've got a lot of pacers or trotters in the barn, young horses, they're racing every night.
Well, have they dropped any of the purse money and any of the tracks, or have they pretty much stayed according to the
No, they've dropped. They're all, because their purses are based on the income of the previous races help pay the purse account. And plus, of course, with the stake races, the track has their portion that goes in, the horsemen have their entry fees and early nominations that go in. But the overnight purses, I think, are down because there hasn't been any revenue to establish them.
Right.
Go ahead.
One of the things, it seems like that they've got it down, you know, if they could get the overnights up, you know, that would really help and everything. And I know a lot of people now are talking, especially in the standard bred business, they're talking about the sales, you know, and things of that nature to see what they can do with their horses. And so I think a lot of people are breathing a sigh of relief saying, hey, we're racing, so I'm going to go ahead and go back to the sales.
Well, yeah, I think that's going to happen. And these sales are going to be open to the public and, of course, be virtual on the Internet so people can – you know, maybe somebody wants to go and check out some horses but doesn't want to stay. They can actually go home, go to their hotel. They don't have to be with everybody after they've, you know, checked out the horses. And then they can watch online and wager online. And that way there's no worries about who's bidding what because, you know, you're on a computer and only the people at the sales company are going to know what's going on. And speaking of the sales, there is Brittany Farms is going to offer, and of course they're probably one of the top breeding farms in the sport and have been for 30, 40 years at least. Brittany Farms is offering virtual inspection of yearlings. And I had to read that twice, and I guess my understanding is that they're going to go right up and here's what these horses look like and show their confirmation and literally, like I say, a virtual inspection, which I think is something great.
Well, you know, Steve, I think what that's going to do, alongside with the leasing end of it, it gives the owners, and their syndicate holders a chance to literally be around their horse without being around their horse.
Exactly. What Brittany Farms is doing is it's pretty much like an online inspection. They're meant to be used as an evaluation tool for everyone to use to look at their yearlings, and those that people that really don't want to have to travel or be in any crowds because of COVID-19. And that, of course, the owners, trainers, their representatives are always welcome or can go and inspect everything. But I think we'll see a lot less people at the sales this year because they're able to do this. They're able to either send someone to go there. They're able to see online confirmation of yearlings now. I mean, we already have them trotting or even pacing free-legged in the fields to show with the video. And now they're just taking it an extra step further with a visual inspection. I mean, I can see it right now. I can just see them going over and showing the horse's head, front, side, walking towards you, individual legs, hoofs up, who knows what. It's got to be a help. More information you get, the more better decisions you can make.
Yeah, they still do it in the thoroughbred business, but back in the day, in the show horse and with the thoroughbreds, all the farms they used to have like a stallion premiere night. They would have a big barbecue at the farm, and they would present the stallions, and they would do their marketing, pitch with them, and the yearlings, and the 2-year-olds, and all like that. And I think that. This is going to be the modern day, show. Each farm's going to be putting on, a program of what they have and, where they're at with them and, that type of thing. Because I think that right now the only thing that this virus has done to the horse industry in all areas, in all breeds, I think it's taken the social aspect out of it. Everything else seems to be moving forward. The racing, the showing, the sales, the breeding, that type of thing. And it might be a good thing. We might learn a good lesson from this.
No, you're right. We've already shown that as a major league professional sport, we were able to adapt to a horrid situation that has not affected sports like this since World War II and overcome it. So that all these tracks are open and racing and providing online entertainment and wagering opportunities for, everyone. And I'm talking about pretty much in North America, but still in a place where baseball hasn't, hockey, football, none of these sports they all shut down. And who knows when some are going to reopen again. Horse racing's there. Equestrian, right. Bull riding, we've talked about with no fans in the stands. They're all able to stick to protocols, successfully run their events, keep their people employed, and have done everything they can to make it happen.
Well, have you heard anything from the drivers? Are they being able to get enough rides a week? Are they being able to get from track to track,
if the driver's in
Kentucky, can he go to Jersey?
Yeah, well, I think traffic is, I'm not sure now. I know the beaches and stuff are open. I don't know how, the traffic was the only problem for these drivers if they weren't flying, to get up from Harris Chester and then get to the Meadowlands in time. I don't think that's a problem. It all depends on the drivers. Some drivers are satisfied with the one track that they go to. They don't want to do double headers. But most of the big boys, they're doing it, and they're successful. I mean, Yannick Gingras wins a couple of stakes at the Meadows, during the day and then flies back to Yonkers to race at night. And so, and other drivers, Dexter Dunn and Tim Tietrich and them, they're all doing double duties with different tracks between Pocono and Harrah's and Harrington, because Harrington's had $100,000 finals, eight of them this week, in their Delaware Development Fund finals. So there's money out there, you know, and these drivers are hungry. I mean, they were without racing for months, and now they want to get back. And sure, they're missing some drives because they got to be here, they got to be there, but there's plenty of opportunity.
Well, hey, have you heard anything about the sales, like the Black Book that would be coming up at Harrisburg?
Everything is going to be open right now. That's the 25% occupancy. They're all going virtual. Okay. All the sales are. It's they've done their homework, and they're going to be able to move forward with it. Right now, I'd say, you know, racing is back. The only thing that's missing is a lot of fans. In other words, other places, others have in Ohio, New Jersey, they're allowing fans and stuff. And as the COVID-19 goes down in those areas, they're going to be able to let fans come in.
Let me ask you this. Do you think that it might be getting to a point to where we can accept and deal and live with the status quo, as they say, of horse racing now? And, you know, if fans do come back, that's great. But if they don't, you know, it's not going to be, a game changer.
No, it is a game changer. Primarily, the top tracks that are offering top purses, Mohawk Raceway, Meadowlands, you know, Yonkers, they'll be able to survive in the long run if this has to keep up. But the smaller tracks, they're doing it and hoping to break even just to get over it until they can get more fans. Again, the big importance here is that, and they're also trying to negotiate a better deal, you know, with all these OTB outlets, because right now, someone that makes a wager from Florida on Twin Spires, the racetrack only makes 3%, whereas if that fan was at the Meadowlands, they would average 19-20% of each dollar wagered, and that's a significant amount of money. So the smaller tracks that don't have fans yet and are racing, I mean, they're investing tens of thousands of dollars that they'll be able to get fans back there at the track instead of wagering online, so they get a much higher rake from it. But I think these, if it stays in the situation that it is, these smaller tracks like Three Rivers in Quebec and a number of the Quebec tracks and a number of the tracks in the United States, the smaller tracks, they're going to suffer and they're not going to make it. They're going to have to eventually close because they can't, they don't have enough simulcast revenue to even pay for the purses, more or less running the operation.
Well, you know, Keeneland used to have a pretty cool setup. You know, Lexington would get kind of crowded during the meet, and then even when the meet was over, they still kept them open. But it looked like a bank, like a drive-through at a bank. You could go in, pull in, there'd be eight or nine cars in line all the time there. You pull up, you tell them, you know, give them your selection, you know, for the races, and then they give you the ticket just like they would, you know, like they were cashing a check for you at the bank. And I wonder if any of the tracks are going to come up with that again.
Well, it's a tough, because of the protocols with wagering, that they have to have cameras, you know, watching the teller person transaction. They have to have cameras watching the self-service machines. I mean, I guess that, of course, they can change things around. I remember when the Hard Rock Casino here in Sunrise, Florida, they fought. They didn't really fight that much, but they came up with the idea because their weather was so great and they needed more room. they started putting blackjack tables outside in the big courtyard area where all the bars and the live music is. Because I know, because I went and played on one. And, you know, I was able to sit outside. And in fact, it was funny because it did have theater stanchions roped off 6 feet away. And I remember my youngest son, Ryan, he was maybe 7, 8 years old. And I lifted the card so he could watch. And then I looked at him for a nod, whether he said, you know, take a card or not. And we played for maybe half an hour, and he was pretty good. But they didn't say a word. He was behind the stanchion, but because it was outside, he was able to watch the game. And people, and there were crowds of people watching others play, you know, and then hoping to get a seat at the table because they were all filled. And if they can do it for that, I'm sure they can do it for racing. But it may have something to do with inside the structure, that you have to be inside the facility. You know, you can't be taking wagers. Right. In other words, because at Pompano Park, you are outside, of course, and you can make wagers on the machines that are there, but it's past the walls of entrance. So I don't know.
Let me ask you about you saying Pompano Park. What do you think about them? What's it look like for them opening up this fall?
Oh, no, they're definitely going to race come the end of October. And because... Florida was one of the few states that allowed racing, that with Gulfstream Park and Tampa Bay reaping millions and millions in simulcast revenue. I mean, there's two tracks that made more during the pandemic when everything was shut down. They made more money in those 3 months than they usually would in a year. I think Gulfstream Park was averaging $260 million a month in wagers. When you're handling money, that was all by computer. Nobody could go at the track. And like you said, with 1,000 horses and all the people involved, they were so successful to allow everything to take place that they reaped great awards. Like we always joke about Fodder Park.
Yeah. They're on the map now, aren't they?
Oh, my God. That was brilliant. And you know what? I have to say to Pompano Park and management there that they blew it and left $1 million profit on the table because they stopped racing. They ended the race meet.
Yeah.
Instead, they should have said, oh, wait a second, everybody stay, because the horsemen there would have been able to race 2-3 days a week, plus the horsemen at your place, at Sunshine Meadows, at Olympia Training Center, those horsemen would have been racing there too. They would have been able to get some early money, get their young horses a start or two before they headed up north, but they didn't do it.
Right.
And I think they would have handled I think they would have handled $3 or $4 million a day, Scott. Easily.
Yeah.
The only track at night. It would have been.
They would have
made
hardest
big
game
money
in town at that time. You know, or if they had kept on going. And, you know, I know that we had a lot of trainers here that they had some horses that were, you know, they weren't going to go to the Meadowlands and, you know, really, you know, tear the place down. If they would have kept them here in Pompano, you know, they could have seasoned them. They could have got some lens under, you know, under their harness. And, you know, I think it could have worked for them.
There's no doubt about it. So I don't know why. I'm going to hopefully find out one day why they didn't race, why they shut down. But I guess because it's very pretty. I mean, they might have gone a week or two without racing and then said to themselves, "Whoa, we made a mistake here. Everybody should stay, and you know we're going to offer purses, and if we do well, we'll jump those purses up and make it strong because." Even, you know, they're racing for maybe 30,000-40,000 in purses. But once they did that, or even if they raised them a little bit higher than expected, I mean, $4 million, that's $120,000 in profit for one night of racing, with more than paid for the purses and everything. But, that's bad hindsight, but what can you do?
Yeah. Well, you know, that's like Woodbine did something that was unique, in which we carry on IEMTV.org, your broadcast of it. They're broadcasting their qualifiers like you did at Olympia. You know,
yes.
they got a YouTube channel. They got another channel that they use. And I tell you what, you know, that added a little value to them, and they can help cut expenses because they have advertisers and sponsors, you know.
Right,
and,
you're
and
absolutely
that was
right.
One of
the they do it.
Biggest things.
The Meadowlands.
You guys were the first
it.
To do it at Olympia.
That's right. As soon as the pandemic hit, Sam Stathis said, let's do some qualifiers, especially nowadays. It's very, very easy. All you need is the judges and the teletimer person because they do everything else and can report it electronically. Made it a breeze. Even the photo finish was spot on right there. And yeah, we had yours truly. I announced the races, and it was fun, and it was something different. And the horsemen wanted to get their horses going. So,
right.
And now the major tracks do it now all the time extensively. And even little old Three Rivers in Quebec had Facebook Live of the qualifying races.
Right.
The pandemic has done one major thing, and that is educate and use technology, the internet, to the fullest extent.
Oh, exactly. Exactly. Well, how did our big horses do this week, Steve? Did any of our big guns get shot down, or did they go on as we thought they were going to go?
Well, the major one was Manchego in Atlanta, and they hooked up in the $170,000 Cutler Memorial. 11 horses, most of them males, but these two mares just pulled away and just fought each other down to the wire, with Atlanta winning by a half length. And the week before that, Manchego had beat Atlanta by a neck. So these two world-class trotting mares, they keep banging heads. They won't this week because Atlanta's racing just against mares. Manchego has the week off. But they'll hook up again probably the next week and the next week. And next thing you know, August 8th is coming around, and it's Hamiltonian time. And as a preview to that, a number of tracks are having their three-year-old stakes, whether they're the state sire stakes or they're the Grand Circuit, and these three-year-old colts are emerging. And is there one that's top right now? The Dan Patch two-year-old trotter of the year, Migo Hall, I think he's coming back and he's racing this weekend. But there's going to be other top horses out there. I'm trying to think here. The Meadowlands itself has, like I said, Atlanta and them racing. They have their New Jersey Sire Stakes. So their average purses on the night, just on a Friday night, is over $25,000 a race. But on Saturday night, that's when the big stakes are. And I'm checking here. I think the Meadowlands has a three-year-old stake race. Go ahead. I cut you off before.
Yeah, they, I was just thinking, with the Breeders' Crown being so, late, into the season and everything, the Breeders' Crown ought to end up being a pretty good, program this year, the races leading up to it.
All the races.
It'll be good.
Yes. And I'm just looking here at the rentals for $44,000 at the Meadowlands has eight horses in it.
Now, let me ask you this. Have you seen any trainers kind of break their routine, and the ones that normally, let's say, go to Pennsylvania, they end up racing more at the Meadowlands or Yonkers than they do in PA?
No, I think they're pretty well set in where they would be normally. I don't think there's any change on that. Plus, because with the exception of maybe Ohio and the Meadows in Pittsburgh, PA, the rest of their tracks are right around each other. You've got Pocono and Harris Chester. You've got Harrington Raceway. You have the Meadowlands, Yonkers. They're all in a, and then eventually in August, Freehold Open. And they're all close to each other, close enough to each other that the horsemen are staying where they normally would be. I mean, if you have a Pennsylvania bred and you live in Jersey, yeah, that's a long drive to Pittsburgh, like 5-6 hours.
Yeah. Well, I tell you, it's going to be an interesting summer, rest of the summer here.
Oh, well, we were talking about the colts for the Hamiltonian. I just want to tell you, there's one here. He's got a different name. It's Julia Tricks Treasure. And this guy has just 3 starts, but he's already got a record of 154. He's already made $47,000 this year. And he's definitely going to be, one of the favorites. He's racing in the Reynolds this week. And some of the other colts that we have to consider, another one is Play Tricks on Me. He's won 2 out of 3 starts already, a record of 153-2 at the Meadowlands. It's made 82,000 already. You know, there hasn't been that much racing opportunity, but here's another one, you know, that so there's already 17, 18 colts just racing at the Meadowlands. Most of them are Hambo eligible. And there's other tracks that are having races with them in there. I'm sure, unlike the Meadowlands Pace, which only drew 12 horses this year, which is the record low in the 30-year history of the race, I think the Hamiltonian is going to be a wide-open affair and is going to have a lot more entries. Yeah, it was really disappointing that many, not that many, only 12 3-year-old pacing colts, enter into the Meadowlands Pace. You know, usually that can be as many as 3 elimination divisions, to reach the final.
Yeah.
Well, but they're good horses that are in there, there's no question on that.
Hambo Day ought to be an interesting day.
I think so. I mean, how are you going to stop people that come to go to the races? And I realize with the virus and all, you definitely don't want an overcrowding. But, they're used to having, 10, 15, 20,000 people come out. And, now they're going to say, you can only have 5,000. So literally, if they say the first 5,000 fans that come to the track, you're the only ones that are going to get in, it's going to make a mad dash. But that would be a good problem to have. I also want to note that on Monday, Yonkers Raceway is hosting the $104,000 Springfield Stakes, which is a final. They had eliminations last week. It is the first major stake for 2-year-olds. Yes, they're going for over $100,000. It race used to be called the Lawrence B. Shepard Memorial, and Lawrence B. Shepard was one of the founder of Yonkers Raceway, but with MGM coming in and buying them up, they've changed most of the major stake races. The Triple Crown races they can't change, but again, like this race here is now what used to be the Lawrence Shepherd is now the MGM Springfield Stake. I think is a sin that the reason you have major races, you name them after somebody because they were important in the history of the track. And by changing the name, you're losing some of that history because the releases talk about Mr. Shepherd, explain who it is. The new people in the sport can read about it and understand, it's named after the guy that founded Yonkers Raceway. But you have these casinos coming in, some of them saying, hey, I don't care what the name was. I don't know who Shepherd was. and they throw it out. Right. I want to name it after this. And right. it's just the sin of the casinos. I'm sorry, Scott. Say it again.
They're doing the same thing with the thoroughbreds.
Oh, they are.
You know, they're getting these corporate sponsors in, and you know, before you know it, it's gone. It's, what is it? The Delaney races in Ireland? Maybe they'll become the Budweiser races or what have you.
Well, it already has, but not as what you're thinking there. I mean, they have sponsorship. Hanover Shoe Farm sponsors the Colt Final, but it's still the VDM. It's still the Vincent Delaney Memorial, sponsored by Hanover. And then Diamond Creek Farm, they sponsor the Philly division. In fact, they have a sponsor, a co-sponsor or title sponsor for every stake race that they have in Ireland. And they did very well with it, but sadly they canceled the race because of the coronavirus.
Right. Well, one of the things that we were talking about this morning in the barn was that Churchill Downs and their stakes are just phenomenal Derby week. You know, they boosted some of them up, double what they were. This year, for example, the Kentucky Oaks, that's going to be a nice race. It's going to be $1,250,000, which for the fillies, and then of course the Derby's at $3 million.
Derby's up to $3 million. Wow.
$3 million.
You know what though? And you think? Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
Well, no, I don't want to change the subject, but I got to bring this up because probably we should have led with it today. But do you think Bob Baffert will have any horses in the Derby this year?
Oh boy, I tell you, I don't know.
Tell us what's going on there.
Well, he had two positives that came back on his horses that ran in Arkansas, and.
Both of them won their division too, and so now
they're all his horses are really becoming really looked at, and so one of the things that told me that that there's problems there already. Somebody they've already got together and they're wanting to bring in legislation that if, like say, a trainer's horses test positive like they did in Arkansas, that the owners will be separated from the whole situation. Owners, will be responsible for their ownership, trainers, the jockeys and so forth. Because right now, if they come back, and test positive, and he gets, 30 days and fines and everything, they lose that money, and that comes out of the owner's pocket. That's not the trainer loses some money, but not like the owners do, I tell you, it's awful quiet. There's three or four trainers out there now that you don't see racing very much. And that kind of makes you, wonder what all is going on. But
has he been fined yet, or has he been suspended on these two positives? Because the split test was sent in, and that also came up positive.
Right. Well, see, there's a lot that they're going through. They're starting to backtrack now, and following a paper trail. It appears to me that they're trying to build a case, just not on those two, but they're going back and looking at, other situations.
I understand that, but if he came up positive in those two races,
right,
he would in the harness racing, he'd immediately get suspended from racing. And has any tracks told them that they don't want them?
Well, what's happened is they've appealed it. They're appealing the ruling. And that's kind of like the kiss of death. If you just say, okay, I accept this and take the punishment, you can get along pretty quick. But once you go in and, tell them that you want a hearing and you want to, investigate it more and do this and do that, it makes it very difficult because now they go back, and start checking on everything.
I understand that. And they pull out split levels and take the other sample and go have it tested again and just to make sure.
Right.
If they find another one, then... But in racing, if that was the case, that the second test was sent to another lab and also came up positive, that person would be, myself as a racetrack manager, I would have to have called them and said, Bob, you can't, we don't want you to race here. Your horses won't be accepted in the box. Now, of course, that can be fought legitimately in the courts, but in most cases, the courts will not supersede a racing commission or a racetrack when a situation like this is involved, and they can, deny him entrance into the race.
Right. Well, it's an ongoing thing, with them, because thoroughbred, are trying to make sure that that the sport is, held to the highest standards.
And, exactly.
It goes all the way back to Justify before, he tested positive. Before he started the Triple Crown or during the Triple Crown, season.
Right.
And everything. And then we had a situation here Monday. We had an owner that was on Facebook, and he made a racial comment. And
that's right.
It got back to Keeneland, and they told him, he's not allowed to bring any horses to the sales. He's not allowed to race there anymore. He's done. That's pretty drastic. And his family had been in the business for many, many years. I'm talking 40, 50 years. And
right.
Appears that you got to really watch what you're doing, no matter where you're at or what sport you're in.
Now, is that trainer suing the racetrack?
I imagine he kind of went through the protocol of apologizing and just kind of letting it settle down, and see, what happens, and then, come back, at a later date and reapply for, owner's license, trainer's license, that type of thing.
Can we say his name?
What's that?
Can we say his name?
I guess we could. It was Tom Van Meter.
Tom Van Meter, okay.
He's a great trainer, great horseman, but I think that, sometimes this social media, gets to you.
Well, let's look at Deshaun Jackson of the Philadelphia Eagles. He opened his mouth yesterday morning and said, racial comments, and he immediately tried to go back and apologize for it, but it was a little late. I mean, he said something about Hitler and the Jews, and it came out the wrong way. And it happens that the owners of the Philadelphia Eagles are Jewish, and he put his foot in his mouth, I guess, just as his trainer has.
Right. Well, see, the thing of it is, in the horse business, is we've gone along pretty much, untouched. Not saying that there's no racism, in the horse industry. When you get down to it, the things that happen, we're pretty much, in line with, society. And
right.
But this was bad, and the person that reposted what they had read was, I guess, a friend, a Facebook friend, and they reposted it, and then it got back to Keeneland and to owners and trainers, and that type of thing. And they said, we don't want that, in our environment and all. So,
no, they're absolutely right. And kudos to people, that saw it and said something, because it's pretty bad.
Right. Right, exactly. You know, and so they're trying to clean that up. And you know, of all sports, the horse industry, if that ever gets, you know, started, it could go bad because you know how some of these families have been in the business 60, 70, 80 years, you know, and around, and how they developed their farms and the people that they've had working for them and, you know, that type of thing, you know. I'm sure there'll be people coming out of the woodwork now saying, oh, yeah, I heard so-and-so say this, you know, at the racetrack one time, you know, or at the farm, you know, this or that. But
well, I understand where you're coming from, but this is...
They stopped it.
This is hard evidence, yeah. And it's well, not you know, the first time, and it's not the last. This is the not the first incident, and it won't be the last.
Right, right. Well, he sold over $5 million worth of horses at the sales, you know, and
wow.
So I'm kind of wondering how that's going to affect, you know, him selling horses or racing horses because, you know, if you can't race in Kentucky, you know, at Keeneland, you know, where are you going to go? You know,
that's
you
right.
Go to the next track and they say, hey, do you have any suspensions or fines or anything? So, well, yeah, I'm ruled off in Kentucky.
Yeah.
You know?
Right. That'll be on his application to race at Saratoga.
Yeah.
Or he might have a stable there already. I'm not sure.
No. You know, he's done. You know, it's kind of like these
right.
guys that got involved with drugging and doping of the horses. You know,
no,
they're
yeah,
going to feel it. They're going to drag it out. But it ain't going to happen for them.
Yeah. No. It's a bad, bad situation that will take a long, long time to heal.
Yep. And I, you know, I don't even, and the bad part about it is he's got family, you know, that's training and involved in it. And, how far down, you know, up the tree will that go?
I know. It could very well need to have it skip a generation until people forget about it and realize have no issues with the stable. But.
I had a guy that I did some work for, and he's from Lexington, and really, you know, he's always been pretty nice to me, but nobody would deal with him, and you know, because he didn't pay bills, and you know, you just had to wonder about how he got what he got, and, you know, what he did, and he had an incident with one of the sheiks. From Saudi Arabia.
Oh.
And let me tell you, it was a knockdown drag out, and he ended up coming out the better. And it involved over 200 horses, you know, but he ended up coming out the better on it. And so nobody would touch him, you know, or help him or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in a jam, and I needed a job, and the gentleman told me, he said, I can't pay you a lot of money, but he said, I need to get this stallion down to South America, and there's some things I need to do here. And he said, but when I sell him, he said, I'll pay you. He said, it was about $1,200, but he housed me and he fed me. And, you know, I didn't suffer any, you know, I just didn't have any cash for about, you know, 3.5 months. And,
wow.
So then when things started straightening out for him, you know, he paid me really well and got, you know, and kept me on my feet, kept me going. So then when the stallion did go to South America, I was sitting in a restaurant in Lexington, and when he walked in, everybody just kind of quit talking because they knew who he was and what was he doing there because he owed everybody
right.
in that room. But when he left that room, I was the only guy he didn't know because he paid me the $1,200 in cash right there, you know, and people tell to this day said, you know, said, it's amazing. Said, you know, you're about the only one I know ever known that's gotten paid by that guy, you know, and all. So, yeah, but that's gone through and followed him for the last 40 or 50 years. You know, that type of thing. And this deal at Keeneland, I don't know how bad that's going to be. You know, if 30 days from now, if Keenan looks back and says, okay, maybe you can take some social ethics classes, you know, when I do this or do that, you know, but it's going to be interesting to see what happens, you know, with it. And fortunately, it's not running rampant through the horse industry.
Right.
It might be, but nobody talks about it, you know, and also. But that, and then, you know, the situation with Baffert and, you know, two or three other trainers, and then, you know, of course, the standardbred and the thoroughbred trainers and all. You know, I think they're pretty lucky, you know, that they haven't really, you know, been thrown on the fire, you know.
Well, I think might get the it down worst the part they are is what has happened is they've indicted these 29 trainers, veterinarians and whatever, and because of the indictments, they're banished. They cannot race. They can't even go near a horse until they have their day in court, which is going to be months away as both sides, you know, start preparing their defense and offense for to go to court with. And unlike situations where you can appeal, I mean, this is the federal government, not the state racing commission where it happened. So, and there is no appeal. You go to trial. I mean, these guys have been indicted on the major charges, and they're going to have to go to court. And until that time, they cannot race or be near horses. And it's caused an awful lot of shuffling and stuff. And horsemen that took some of these horses have come under scrutiny big time, and ability, you know, who is the proper owner of the horse. In one case, trainer Rene Allard, his brother, Simone, who was one of the leading drivers, has been at Pocono Downs for years now, the top driver, he barely gets three, four drives in a weekend. I mean, it's as if guilt by association, you know, because he's the brother of Rene Allard that did get indicted and faces big charges, but nothing, you know, nothing with his brother. His brother wasn't in charge, wasn't at the farm most of the time. He was just doing the driving. He's got to suffer from it too.
Right. Well, you know, I don't know what the situation is in Kentucky now. I'm starting to, you know, check into it a little more. You know, but when it first was released, it was Keeneland, you know, made the decision not to allow him to race to sell or, you know, what have you. And that's where he's from, is Lexington. And so, you know, I don't know if the Racing Commission is going to get involved or if that's just something that Keeneland's doing and not the Racing Commission, you know, that type of thing.
No, in most states, that's going to make a big difference. Yeah, in most states, if a track is privately owned, if it's not like the Meadowlands used to be, which was a state authority complex, if it's individually owned, they have the right to exclude anyone who they feel is detrimental to the racetrack, to the wagering public. They can tell them, that's it, we don't want you to race here anymore. And in a lot of cases, they don't even have to give a reason. They might if the Racing Commission asks why, but other than that, they have that right of exclusion. I mean, it's a very powerful tool, but a very good tool if, you know, for a racetrack to use. And as a former track manager in that situation, absolutely, I would bar the person without question and not have, and the only person I need to say anything to, if I don't have to say anything to, is the actual trainer. I mean, in most cases, when I would bar somebody from competing at the track, they know why.
Right. And, well, you know, I tell you what, with the team and dropping a hammer down like they did, I tell you what, I think that is, I guarantee you every horseman from here on out is going to really think twice what they post on Facebook and social media.
Absolutely. You know, they have to.
Well,
Scott, I think we've had talked on so much today, we're out of time.
I know. Well, Steve, it was good. I think we had a good week. Racing looks like it's getting back. Sales is getting back.
Yeah.
You know, I'm excited about it. You know, looking forward to this next coming up week in the Meadowlands and all the racing.
Yeah, so, big racing on Saturday night for sure, and I'll be watching it all.
You got that right. You have that right for sure. So what we're going to do here is close out today. Thank everybody for helping us. BBS, thank you.
We'll have another big show next week.
Yeah, we'll have another good one, see who does what.
Okay, Scott. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Steve. You too now. Bye.